or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Time. It seems like we're all asked to do ever more with ever less time, but how do we do it without going nuts? So over the last couple of weeks, I've kind of kept track of all the things that I try to do to get more done in less time without being crazy, as well as ideas that I've just been giving for years off and on to my clients, and assembled the best of them for you. And because I'm kind of this anomalous kind of, I like to call myself simply hard worker rather than workaholic, to insert a measure of normalcy in the discussion, I have a more normal person. She works very hard. It's not like she's, you know, hardly lazy. She works about 60 hours a week. But she's not the 70-hour-a-week guy that I am. And she's also a very special person. She has, despite not working 90 hours a week, achieved a tremendous amount. She is not only the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, not only is she on the state's technology committee, not only is she on the cabinet of the state superintendent of schools, not only does she testify all over the country, including on Capitol Hill and lobby there and on Sacramento, she's also a great wife and a great grandma. Not a great grandma, I mean a wonderful grandma, Dr. Barbara Nemko, my wife. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. Thanks for giving me part of your Sunday.
Oh, you're very welcome. So I have a challenge for you.
Uh-oh, wait a minute. We didn't talk about this. What do you mean that you have a challenge for me?
I have a challenge for you. Maybe I wouldn't have challenged you if you hadn't called me a great grandma. but you get an incredible amount done. It's almost like super normal. So, but you also do three-minute career makeovers. So here's my challenge to you. How many time management tips can you give us in 3 minutes, I have a stopwatch.
A three-minute time over, huh?
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay, give me a second to try to gather my thoughts. Okay. And, okay, you count them. We'll see how many we can do. Okay.
That's pretty quick gathering of thoughts.
Well, this is radio. Dead air is not exactly the best thing in the world, so we gotta wing it. So here we go.
Okay, I got my stopwatch on your mark.
Really? Okay.
Get set.
Really? Okay.
I'm really. Go.
Okay. Well, the most important thing is the thing that if anything makes me so efficient is that I am always have this little voice, like this kind of Pinocchio in my ear, whispering, or Jiminy Cricket, I guess, telling me, be time effective. Is this really worth this much? Is this task worth this much time? Should I do it more or less perfectionistically? I don't try to be the best. I don't try to be the fastest. I'm saying, is this time effective? Is the task time effective? And is the way I'm doing it giving me the most bang for the buck, bang for the minute? Okay, that's my first one.
One, I'm sure I'd kill myself if I had to put everything I ever do through that lens.
Hey, this is my time. 3 minutes. Wait a minute. You don't want to talk. You can talk after my 3 minutes is up.
Okay, go.
Okay. Figure out when you do need help. You can get help more often than you realize. Like, and hopefully these are set. You're going to count these separately. Like getting an intern, you know, to help you get some of the work off. How about somebody, let's say you get overwhelmed. That's two. Oh, yeah, right? Okay. Let's say somebody, you get overwhelmed by big tasks and you don't know how to break it up into baby steps. Well, get somebody who's really good at that to do that. That's a real time saver, yes?
That's good. That's three, and you've only used 1 minute and 7 seconds.
Oh, my God. Okay, we got more. Okay. How about a personal assistant? You know, everybody thinks only rich people get personal assistants, but if you hire somebody for just a couple hours a day at $10 an hour, these days there's so many people struggling. Get somebody to drive Junior from school to soccer and back to home, and then or to wait for the usually late, you know, the repair guy who's always late. Getting a personal assistant's another one. That count?
Okay, that's four.
Okay. Now, here is a big one, of course, that many people don't realize that time is the most valuable commodity we have. That's what Thomas Edison said. It's the most valuable possession. So, for example, do you spend a lot of time sharing silly things on Facebook? You could save time there. Is that one?
That's one. That's five.
Okay, what if you spend a lot of time meandering around the mall? You don't really need anything. You already have 96 pairs of shoes, 17 shirts, and 17 suits, but there you are meandering the mall a lot. Is that one?
Time. I'm not sure I'm buying that, but okay. Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. How about like, you know, how many sitcoms do we watch that really aren't that funny, but there's this laugh track and it kind of makes you laugh. I mean, maybe saving some time by not so watching so many sitcoms.
Yeah, okay, that's eight.
Okay, what about, all the people with video games, they spend this time just shooting cartoon characters, which is really what video game characters are, with their joystick and spending hours. Is that a good way to say, is that a time suck to...
In another context, you would tell us about all the important learning that happens when people are doing video games.
But not shooting cartoons, you know, shooting characters, just going shoot 'em ups, no. Okay, how about this? How about there are many people who love making dinner, but they, you know, they fool themselves into thinking that, they're taking the 2 hours to prepare these dinners that really in the end they're not that tasty or not any tastier, certainly not healthier than, let's say, you threw together a dinner salad that your family loves. Isn't that a great way to save a lot of time?
Can't eat salad every night of the
I didn't
week.
Say salad. I said that's one example.
3 seconds.
How many seconds? Okay.
Sorry, time's up.
Time's up. Oh.
But you got 10.
Well, 10 in 3 minutes isn't too bad. Can I get
another? I'm not sure I agree with all of them, but 10 is excellent.
There was a lot more I was going to say, but how about you sharing some first? Do you have some tips you want to share? You want me to time you? I'll give you 3 minutes.
Oh, I don't know. See, because I don't have that little guy sitting on my shoulder. That would make me insane.
Okay, well, we don't want to make you insane.
I appreciate that.
Do you have any tips, time management tips you do want to share at the pace that you would like to?
At a leisurely pace, because life is short and also needs to be enjoyed.
Well, it's because life is short, you try to cram the most in. It's like, I love what Isaac Asimov said. He had written 500 books, and he said, if you had 6 months to live, what would you do? And everybody thought he'd go, travel, smell the roses. He said, I'd type faster.
Which is wonderful for Isaac Asimov. I know nothing about him personally. I loved his books, but I would be most interested to know if he had a family or children or relatives or friends, or was he an isolated person for whom that was appropriate. I think each of us needs to figure out what time means to us. It is the one thing in life you can never get back. If you lose it, it's gone.
Now, this is the truth. Now, I work 70 or 80 hours a week. We have been together for 40 and a half years. Of course, I met you when you were six. I was a very devoted father as Amy was growing up. Because I worked at home, I took her everywhere. We played flute, we played ball. I drove her to Lawrence Hall of Science. We giggled. We had dinner every night. We did story time. You know, so one can indeed be a good family member and also work a lot of hours. It's the other stuff that I talked about that can enable you to save time. Was that a fair statement?
That's probably true, but some of us need more downtime than others. And downtime is not something to be sneered at. You can be, for some of us, you can be more efficient if you have some time when you allow yourself to just relax. And that's the time that you can be writing things on Facebook or watching a sitcom or playing a video game. The issue is to containerize that downtime. It's fine to say, I'm going to allow myself this hour today to do what I feel like doing that has no useful social value and will not get me a job promotion. But if that 1 hour becomes 4 hours, now you have a problem, and that's when you have to look at what am I doing and how does it fit in.
Of course, everybody's different, but what I have observed is that many people are both more relaxed and feel more productive when they are working, for example, at what they're good. If you're working at something that's too hard or you're not good at, or just tremendous time pressure is another story. But many people are more relaxed. I think if we hooked up a blood pressure monitor to people who are working at what they do well, they are more relaxed than when they're playing video games, than even very often when with their family where there is a lot of tension and fighting, then they are more relaxed than watching a ball game and yelling at the umpire for calling a ball a strike. So I don't think that necessarily downtime is a more likely path to rejuvenation. Does that make any sense?
I think that's very individual. I think that definitely would be true for you. I don't think it's definitely true for all of us.
Nope, and I agree with that.
Individual differences.
You have another tip?
One of my very favorite tips. We all get lots of professional magazines that fly in our mailbox.
Yep.
And usually in each magazine, there may be one article, occasionally two, that's really meaningful for us.
Yep.
What happens is you get the magazine and you put it on the pile, and then the pile grows and it sits by your bed, and then you have 14 magazines piled there and you throw them all out because you can't deal with going through 14 magazines. So the trick is you get the magazine, you go through the table of contents, you find the one article that has real relevance for you, you rip it out, and you throw the rest of the magazine away. Now, either you deal with that ripped out article because it has relevance for you right now, or you put it in your to read folder that you take with you when you're going someplace and you might have a little bit of extra few minutes, you're waiting for something, you're online in the supermarket, you can read it then. But better to take that article, indicate what you want to do with it. Usually you want to share it with someone, send it to somebody, make a suggestion about what can be done based on the contents of the article. Do it then.
And a very good, makes perfect sense. And of course, we're not just talking about magazines in print that you need to rip out. These days, so much of what gets sent to each, what gets circulated around, is on the internet in an email and an attachment or whatever, and that, of course, counts as well. The other thing that I really liked about what you said is what you do with those. You don't necessarily need to read them at that moment, but creating that file is an example of what I call a sponge activity. There are, in many days, there are pieces of chunks of time that you really don't mind at all being productive, and it's completely relaxing. If you're on BART and you're there or you're waiting for BART, instead of just vegging out, which sometimes, look, I like to veg out too. I like to listen to music, you know, all that stuff. But sometimes it will feel good when you, especially if you're impatient. Let's say you're sitting at the Bay Bridge and you are there at the metering lights and you're sitting there basically stopped for 20 minutes. You know, that's a great time to be reading, or on BART, or when you're waiting in the doctor's office, or even if you've got a long, you know, you work during the day and you come back and now you're going to stop at Trader Joe's and there's 87 people in line, so you're going to be in line for 15 minutes, having something to read, or an MP3 player, you know, you've got your iPhone and your earphones on, and you could be listening to a book on tape, or just fun music or whatever. I think that notion of a sponge activity is great. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay. You want to offer more tips? Should we go to the phones?
Here's another one. Okay. And this one I learned from my executive assistant, the amazing Nancy Lewis.
Yes.
She never can do one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. So when she's in her car driving someplace, when she stops at a traffic light, she uses that time to clean out her purse. So her purse never has all the random pieces of paper and clutter that most people's have, and she hasn't spent any time doing it.
I think that's a great point, and multitasking has a bad reputation unfairly. For example, I, every day, as you well know, in between my late afternoon and my early evening client, I take Einstein for a hike. And it's always part of my ritual. I go around the Lafayette Reservoir with Einstein, which gives me my exercise and him his exercise, but I also bring either a smartphone or a memo pad, and I will either listen to a book on MP3, or I will bring a problem that that really requires some really good thought, where I'm not distracted and have the oxygenation increase that comes from doing it while I'm exercising. So I'm doing three things at once. I'm getting exercise, my doggy's getting exercise, my doggy's peeing and pooping, and I'm getting to think about whatever it is, the thorniest problem I've got to face without distraction. And let me tell you, that's a lot less stressful and more. I guarantee that if someone were looking at my stress level, if I were doing that while I'm hiking, and of course I'm also enjoying nature, I'm not, you know, I'm talking to people, I see another cute dog, I pet the dog, you know, the other dog. So I think multitasking can be inefficient if it makes you crazy, if you're rushing, but not rushing is to me the problem, not multitasking. But if you can multitask without rushing, that can often be a terrific way to save time. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. You got another tip?
Another great Nancy Lewis tip.
Okay.
She washes her car while talking on the phone.
Sure. Why not?
And that way she gets to chat for as long as she wants without wasting time.
Sure.
Now, of course, she washes her car every week, and many people don't do that, but if you are one of those people, it's a great idea.
Yeah, parallel example. I have many clients who are by phone, you know, because the traffic in the Bay Area is ridiculous. So people who live in Palo Alto, you know, they'd rather not drive to Oakland. So, you know, usually very often we'll have a first session in person, but then the rest will be by phone or Skype. But when I have a phone client, if the weather is nice, I am often on my deck with a headset on. I'm listening completely intently to my client, but I can mindlessly pull weeds from the beautiful deck garden I have.
Excellent.
You know, so it's something that it gets stuff done, and it's actually very calming. The fact that I'm pulling weeds, you know, of course, people in this tough job economy are under a great deal of stress, and I feel their pain, forgive the cliche. And if I am simply pulling weeds while I'm talking to them, I'm fully present for them, but I'm also staying calmer. So there's another example of constructive multitasking, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another one, or should we go to the phones?
Let's go to the phones and see what other people do.
Okay. So there's a lot of reasons you could call. Number one is if you either agree or disagree or want to amplify any of the time management tips we're talking about, if you want to suggest your own, or if you are overwhelmed. If you don't know how to manage your time well, either a specific project you're doing or just in life, and you're looking for a little bit of free guidance, Barbara and I would be happy to give it to you. So for all of those reasons, the topic is time, our most valuable commodity, how to make the most of it without going nuts. With your question or your comment, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Barbara, while we're waiting for the calls to come in, you have another tip or you want me to share?
Why don't you share? You are the king of time management.
Yeah. Well, related to what we were talking about is the notion of ritualization. If you ritualize part of your life, you can really save a lot of time. For example, I mentioned that, you know, 5-6 days a week, I go around the Lafayette Reservoir with Einstein, the doggy. But then right next to that is an ATM. Right near there is an ATM and a Trader Joe's, you know, like a half a mile away. So I make my ritual. Whatever checks for my clients I have to deposit, I always make a point. I take them and I put them in, you know, in my wallet. And so I know they're there. And then I go around the reservoir. And then, because a little before I get to the bank, there is the Trader Joe's. I like Trader Joe's. And I make a point. I always go to Trader Joe's. I get what I need. I love their little free samples. Maybe have a little mini cup of coffee. Buy what I need. And then from there, I'm parked. It's like 15 steps to the ATM, so I don't have to park again. I simply walk to the ATM. I actually am taking the checks out and my ATM card as I'm walking to the ATM. So it takes like zero time. Stick the card right in the ATM machine. I'm back in the car. Einstein is now exhausted, happy to sleep, and we drive back and veg out on the way back. So I've got this ritual that works very efficiently without any stress and no doubt saves a lot of time. Ritualizing is a great thing. Do you ritualize anything, Barbara?
Well, I think all of us try to group. I wouldn't call it ritualizing, but I group my activities. So if I'm going to be in a particular part of town, I figure out all the things I need to do there so I don't have to run back and forth. And so in some ways that does become ritualized. I know if I'm driving to a particular place, these are all the errands I'm going to take care of because they happen there.
Well, I think we do ritualize certain things. Let me give out the phone number again, though. If you have a problem related to time, you're overwhelmed and would like something to kind of make some sanity out of the time mess that you're in, or you have a suggestion around how to improve how you've become more effective in dealing with time, practical or psychological. One of the things that I've learned is, for example, all these are kind of very tactical tips, but a lot of times feel their life is so crappy that it's not worth trying to be time effective. They say, it's hopeless anyway. My life sucks. I'm depressed. I'm lonely. My work life is inevitably doomed. So they don't give a crap. Or they're working for an organization where you basically can't get fired unless you rape a child. And so you just are not worried about being time effective. You're worried about just clock watching. So if you have either a solution or a problem related to time and time management, we'd be happy to try to help you out with what we call a 3-minute workover here on Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. So I was saying that you do ritualize. For example, one of the things we enjoy doing is we enjoy inviting people. We enjoy throwing parties. But we have a very clear, we have a plan. We know exactly how we do our parties. We need an activity because we know people get bored after an hour. So we always have an activity, you know, whether it be a staged reading of a play or talent show or scavenger hunt or blind wine tastings or whatever. We know we've got the activity. We know that we have hors d'oeuvres that we get from Trader Joe's that we love. We get those. We know your salad is always great, so we know we're going to have to make that salad. that's a non-negotiable. We know that we often will bring in from not some fancy catering place, but a place that we love, like Allspice, the Indian restaurant, or Wasing, the Chinese restaurant. They'll bring in food. We have this ritual. We have this whole thing set up, so it becomes quite, the champagne glasses go out at this time.
You have a plan. If you're doing a party, it's kind of a mental checklist.
Which we do all the time. It's like, right, and that checklist is another great way to save time. If it's something you do regularly, having a checklist ensures that everything gets done. There isn't a lot of wasted time. Checklists may be the most underappreciated time management tool of all.
And like, another one that Julie Morgenstern talks about, and I absolutely adore her, is the night before, take a look at what you're planning to accomplish the next day. Because you have a schedule, kind of a calendar of things, meetings you have to be at or places you have to go, but that's different from what you plan to accomplish. And it's so easy to let things just happen. The other thing she said, I remember reading it a long time ago, you can't have your email open all day because that will use up all day. You really should set aside an hour to look at your email, respond to everything, but don't let that suck up all the time in the day. Accomplish what's on your to-do list. Say, this is what I have to do. Figure out when you do it best. Are you really good first thing in the morning? Then don't do your email first thing in the morning. Do what you need to get accomplished. Then set aside the time for your email.
I know that everybody's different, but I know that's the conventional advice. I am somebody who loves keeping my email on all the time. It's fun for me to take a break from what I'm doing and look at my email. I like seeing when it comes in. Sometimes somebody really appreciates if I respond right away. I actually respond to all my email, and part of what enables me to do that, everything I do, no email goes unresponded. Even if it's very rare when I have to say, I need a couple of days to think about it, like Warren Farrell, my dear friend and men's advocate, sent me a proposal for his new book. And we're going on vacation today, and I emailed him back, and I said, Warren, it looks really interesting. I can't read it now. I'm going on vacation. I'm taking it with me. I'll get back to you when I get back Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. So I do think that it's very human and respectful, and it's almost a lost courtesy that we should be.
But you said not to respond. I merely said you don't need to respond the second it comes.
What I'm saying is, if
I walk into my office at 8 o'clock and I say I really have to do this today. I have to do a proposal. I have to respond to something that somebody sent me that's really important. I have to plan a meeting. I do that first. I don't start off looking at my email at 8 o'clock in the morning. And when I've accomplished what I needed to accomplish at 10 o'clock, then I say, okay, now I'm going to look at my email.
Well, what I'm saying is that very often, if you just allocate a fixed amount of time, there's some big disadvantages to that. Number one, there is stuff that these days, email is the primary method of communication. And if you wait 3 hours, 6 hours, 24 hours, sometimes there's important things that don't get addressed. Two, it's a nice little break from other activities. And three, most people can't, if they confine it to 1 hour, most busy people can't answer their all email in an hour. I like to break, instead of sitting and staring at email all, for an hour at a time, I find it more fun to break it up. So I think here we have to invoke the idea of one size does not fit all.
That's true for everything.
Okay. All our lines are lighted up. And so thank you for being patient with your time. But now let's go right to you. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, it's you.
This is Jan from Berkeley.
Hi.
I wanted to just suggest something that I got from Thich Nhat Hanh, the wonderful Buddhist teacher from Vietnam.
Okay.
And this is a really good way of reducing stress.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I come to a red light, I smile.
Interesting.
There's a lot of brain research that mm-hmm. shows that when we smile, it releases certain endorphins mm-hmm. and cuts down on cortisol. Driving is such a stressful activity, but if we get in the habit of smiling every time we come to a red light, it really helps.
I think that's true, even metaphorically, rather than a red light. Every time, if you're feeling like, let's say you're dealing with a difficult person, it may feel forced, but the actual smile does tend to, does tend to make you more relaxed and more open to dealing with that person. I like that idea very much, and you're an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco workforce, and thank you very much for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you. Are you there? Let's go to the next line. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm Jeff, and thanks for your show. Your guys have been great. I've been listening to you for a while.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you, I mean, I think the answer is time management, as you're discussing, but any specific advice for a person that's worked for someone else, you know, their whole life, but at age 52 is on the verge of finally getting his own business, running a bit of an artist, and how to manage, you know, I'm like, it's a lot of time to try to do both and to kind of make the jump. Ideas?
Well, some people, especially if they're an artist temperament and they're used to having the structure of work, the challenge is going to be the artistic temperament tends to not be unduly time conscious. And also, without anybody structuring your time, there's a chance that, you know, you'll fritter a lot of it away. So one of the things to do really is to schedule time with yourself. So in other words, that your butt is going to be in the chair at 8, even just like you were working for somebody. If your boss, when you're working for somebody else, expects you to show up at 8:30 or 9 o'clock, you know, that you make a schedule for yourself, that your butt is in the chair when you're working for yourself at that same amount of time, and that you have a lunch break that is at noon or whatever, sometimes scheduling it. And the other thing really, there's two other things. One really is the recognizing... and this may sound too philosophical, but the primacy of productivity. Many people, especially artist types, are aesthetic. They're about pleasure, and to them, pleasure is the highest goal. And if one recognizes that one can achieve pleasure simply by masturbating all day or eating or watching Marx Brothers, you know, movies or cartoons, but has left the world no better, but you are only better to the extent to which you produce something, that can really help. And there's a third leg to the three-legged stool, which is having somebody work for you even a few hours a day so you feel accountable. You won't feel like a slug or lazy if somebody is paid, maybe an assistant doing some of the crap work you don't like to do, but they see you there, and if you're screwing around, you'll be embarrassed. So I think those are the kind of things that you might want to do. Schedule your time as though you were working for somebody else, recognizing the primacy of work, and three, hiring somebody even a few hours a week to do the work you don't like and also to make you feel accountable. Do any of those feel like they might be of help to you?
Yes, yes, and yes. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Thanks very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Barbara, do you has there ever been an explicit time management technique that you specifically created to deal with the fact that you were frustrated with your inefficiency? You're not inefficient, but I'm just curious if there was something that you've latched on to in your own life.
Yeah, probably the ripping out articles and dealing with them right away and throwing away the magazines. That's my favorite. And lists. I have lists for everything.
How do you know? Many people say that you know you should only have one list and it should be on, you know, you're in your phone or, you know, in one place. I will admit, you know, you say I'm very efficient, but I used to have a list in my computer, you know, simply a master list. I have been taking to actually, believe it or not, have little colored pieces of paper on my desk at different invisible places, and I'm finding that just fine. Now, things that are longer-term projects I put on the master to-do list, but stuff I want to just get done in the next hour or 2 hours, I just keep on pieces of paper. What's your system for lists?
I have a book that goes everywhere with me, and I use it to take notes in and to write down what I need to do. I know a lot of people do it on their computer or their iPad. I just love the satisfaction of putting a check when I get something done, and then transferring over from one page to the next if there's something left on the list. But that works for me.
Let me ask you this. If the goddess were looking down upon you, would the goddess say you are sufficiently, not obsessively, but sufficiently time efficient? And if not, maybe you want me to do a 3-minute workover on you to help you be more time efficient, or no? What do you think?
Because you would put that little guy on my shoulder and he's not living in my life.
Okay. So you're comfortable with where you are. Okay.
Well, I think, again, could I be more efficient? I'm sure I probably can. Have I accomplished most of the things I've wanted to accomplish? Yes, and more. So why must I change my life to be more efficient when it's pretty efficient?
Perfect. Then, you know, I just was asking the question. It wasn't a leading question. It was just a question. Our lines are quite full, so let us go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hi. It's you. I guess you're not. Bye. Let's go to the next line. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I wanted to add to your charming wife, I tend to do circles, and then I put a check mark, like you were saying, and I put a dot if I say I made a phone call, but I didn't get to finish it because I only left a message.
So you use the circle for what and the check mark for what?
When I do, say I have a dozen things, and first a phone call, then maybe it's to finish something has to go in the post, you know, those sort of things. So say it's a phone call, I made the phone call, I only were able to leave a message but not finish the conversation.
Right. So it's for tasks that you that have multiple components, you have a little coding system, you know, check mark for the first part, done, circle for...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very good. But, well, I appreciate that.
And lastly, I do have a question for me.
Oh, sure, please.
Do you have any books to recommend for procrastination?
Oh, I've written a ton. I'd like you to spend no money. I've written probably 100 articles on procrastination. So
I tend to start things. Sorry to interrupt you. I tend to start things, and I'll say 90% of it done, and the last 10% I...
Okay, we'll deal with that specifically, but first let me answer the first part of your question. I wrote an article. I was supposed to be teaching a course for the teaching company called Developing Drive, which addressed this, and then I wrote kind of a summary of the main points of the course in an article. So if you just Google Marty Nemko and Developing Drive,
Drive.
But now let's turn to the specific question you're raising here, which is that you get tasks 90% done and then 10% don't. That can come from many causes. That could either become you're afraid of getting it done because then they're going to give you more work, or the last 10% is the hardest 10%. Either one of those two are the cause of your procrastinating the last 10%.
Yeah, it's a little fear of failure as well.
Okay.
So I fail.
There's two kinds of fear of failure. One is rational and one is irrational. If one were to look at the kind of projects that you procrastinate on, are they generally crappy? Do they need to be better? Or are they generally pretty good enough?
Oh, no. I do the extra, which is not a problem. It's more things that I'm procrastinating on. In this case, say I need to do something, get myself more out there. Because times have changed. Before, I always had my freelance work, artist-based, by word of mouth, and now it's not my way anymore.
But you're saying that's two different things. You're saying on the one hand, you're saying there's tasks that you were 90% completed with and you're procrastinating on 10%, but now you're saying you need to get yourself out there, sounds like, to get work.
Yes,
and that's zero. So Right. Let's take one of those. Do you want to take the tasks that you're procrastinating in the last 10%, or you want to procrastinating your whole overall attempt to get yourself out there to get work?
In this case, the first part, kind of, for example, I've been recommended to go on called Thumbtack. I don't know if you recommend that.
I've never heard of it.
Sorry?
I've never heard of it. What's Thumbtack?
Thumbtack is, they take a small percentage if you get the job. It's for freelance people, whether they're rearranging people's furniture to painting to collecting someone's, translating English to Spanish, what have you.
There's a bunch of those. There's Mechanical Turk, which is Amazon's program. There's 99 Designs. There's Elance.com. There's Guru.com. There's a ton of those, and they don't really take any money from you. So before you go to Thumbtack, you might look at some of those others. But let's get to the point. So the point is you haven't put yourself out there on Thumbtack. Is that correct?
Right. And also on LinkedIn, I haven't really made that as an issue.
And so let's take us
whatever
to...
Whatever you recommend to get myself out
yeah,
there.
Let's work at that. So the way we get to the cause of this is to the moment of truth. Let's say right now we were going to get off the phone and you were going to go to LinkedIn. And certainly everybody does need a LinkedIn profile these days. It's the modern-day resume and repository of references. So let's say you are going to get off the phone and get on LinkedIn. Where is the resistance? What is making you reluctant? Is it you don't know what you want to do career-wise? Is it you feel your profile will suck? What do you think is really at the root of your not going on LinkedIn and completing your profile?
I think it's because I'm multi-talented, and what I used to do, I sometimes compromise too much. I have to really focus down what it is that I'm...
Got it. So in other words, if let's say we spend the next few minutes talking about what you really should be doing and developing a laser focus for your career efforts, would you then be able to go on to LinkedIn and feel good about filling out the profile?
Yeah, I'd have to have someone to help me because really many illustrations to large murals and so forth.
Illustrations so to what? I didn't understand that. I'm sorry.
I had to transfer the imagery and information.
Well, you don't. What happens, all you're going to need to do in LinkedIn is you just put a link to whatever your website is or blog.
You already have it on already.
Yeah, if it's on your website or blog, then you don't need to transfer the actual images to LinkedIn. Just have a link to your work on LinkedIn. But let's focus now on the target of your work. You say you're multi-talented is the term you used. Yeah. What would you say are the two or three things you're undecided among? Or do you want to be, there are some people who love having a three-ring circus life and want to promote all three. Do you want to promote one thing, two things, or three things?
Probably the three things.
Okay, what are they?
Well, I'm very good at, even designers would call me, I'm intuitive. I know exactly how to match a color to repair anything. Also to choose the right color next to a color, that sort of thing.
So color, do you repair something? So in other words, like antique refinishing? Is that what you're talking about?
That's been done too. When I was crippled for a while, I was repairing antique Japanese silk screens.
Okay. And so what you said, tell me more about the color. In what context do people pay you to do color selection?
Well, color selection, say they, from anything from their house, they say from scratch, or they already have something else and they don't know what else to match with it, be it a throw, a pillow in the bedroom.
Got it. Okay.
Whatever.
So you're kind of an interior decorator person or an exterior, or a color specialist? There are these people.
I'm a color specialist,
and I do
very high-end, almost like Getty type, murals, but I've also done things for fancy restaurants, murals for pools and even hospitals.
Okay, and so that's one of your three. What are the other two of your expertises?
For example, I'm doing a Lionel truck for See's Candy, so I'm very good at illustration.
Wait, is it Lionel truck? I'm not understanding.
Lionel train, sorry.
Oh, a Lionel train for See's
Candy. Lionel train, I'm doing a See's car for Lionel and for See's Candy.
Okay, so you're creating in three dimensions. You're actually painting. Are you painting a
illustration?
You're doing an illustration of a Lionel train with the C's logo on it.
For C's Candy.
So you're a good freehand artist. Is that correct?
Very. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Is there a third, or are those the two?
Murals. I do interior murals mostly.
I'm still understanding. I'm hearing it as meals.
I do interior murals.
Oh, murals. Okay.
Mm.
Okay.
From abstract to very representational.
Okay.
And the thing is, I've always had great success. Is I'm very good colors, and I don't just do like some interior designers do. I don't think do what I just think. I really am a giving person, so I do what's going to be healing and the best for that client.
Now, I do know in any field there is going to be some small percentage of people who make money. I think being a color specialist, when I'm listening to you, reading between the lines, the thing you love most is color. Is that right?
Correct.
And so if I asked you to try to have the guts to try to become one of those, probably 100 people in the United States right now who make a living simply as a color specialist. I remember Carl Cardell used to be just a painter. They painted houses in Berkeley. But then he became a color consultant. And I still see his trucks all over the place. You know, they're color consultants. Do you want to take the risk of trying to become Mr. Color and really make that the focus of your LinkedIn profile, your thumbtack, your guru, all of that? Or do you want to? Are you too scared to do that and want to also pitch your mural writing?
No, you're amazing. I think that you hit a real key idea. That sounds fantastic.
Okay.
And of course, special, and that's fantastic.
So good. So I want to quit while I'm ahead. So what I invite you to do is in freehand, I want you to describe with as much enthusiasm but with integrity what your being a color specialist would look like. Who would your target customers be? What could you provide that was so much value added that they would want to hire you? What could make it fun for you? Lay it all out and then use that as the basis for creating your LinkedIn profile and posting your presence on whether it be Thumbtack or anything else. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. You've been very kind. I hope some other people, if they're listening, got something out of it because you were very kind to give them so much time. I really, really appreciate it.
It's an honor to do this work. I feel this is my mission in life. Yours may be to select colors. Mine is to do career coaching and speaking and writing. That's who I am.
Done some from Alzheimer's and the UNIST, you name it. Bless you both. Thank you so much.
You too. Barbara, you've been patiently listening. What are your reactions to what we've been saying?
Well, I think, as always, you honed in on some specific areas for him and helped to clarify. And I think very often people don't realize how important it is. We all have these ideas rolling around in our heads, and having someone who really can provide very direct, focused advice is worth the investment. Usually you don't get it for free like people can on this show. But certainly to call in and have the advantage of your 40 years of experience in doing this is quite a gift.
Not 40, 25.
Yeah, well, but there are all those other years before when you were learning things that you used in the 20s.
Yeah, I was getting beaten up by other kids. That was what I was learning, is how to take noogies in the head. Anyway, I digress. Anyway, really, I want you to get the advice for free, dear listeners. So if you we've got a couple of lines open. So if you have a problem with any aspect of your career, but especially we've been talking time management. But again, like I like the previous call, because time management often is the symptom of the problem. It's not the real cause of the problem. So, you know, whether you've got a problem that you think is time management or something else, anything related to career. And remember, Barbara's not chopped liver. I may know stuff, but Barbara is, you know, she is in her way far more successful than I am. She really, for those of you just joining us, she is on the state superintendent of schools cabinet. She does testify on Capitol Hill. She does lobby senators. She is beloved in Napa. She's the woman of the year for Napa County. So you've got a pretty heavy hitter there in Barbara. It's not all about me. You want some free advice, though, 415-841-4134. That's the number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. Anything career-related directly or indirectly, 415-841-4134. Barb, you want to offer a tip or something? If you go to phones.
Give me a minute to think about another tip. Right now, go to the phone.
Okay, very good. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can we help?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Ojocion in San Francisco. I do so love your show.
Thank you so much.
And my friend has told me about listening to you and your wife through the years. And so I do have a question for Barbara, and then I
Great.
Have sort of an observation for you.
Wonderful. Go ahead.
Barbara.
Yes.
Whatever happened to the dedication of the California Lotto funds to the California school districts? Why do teachers have to buy supplies for their kids, et cetera?
The lottery funds are still coming to schools. Usually they got used for things that were not budget items that either could be afforded or we had budget lines for them. They were more unrestricted in terms of what teachers could do with them. The problem is that we have lost so much in terms of our straight budget line items, and we've had such huge reductions over the past few years that even with Prop 30 having passed, over the next 5 years, they hope to get us back to where we were in 2007-8. So all the classroom supplies that people used to get just aren't there.
Barbara, is that true? That people at this point, I mean, all I ever hear about is bond teaching, education bond issues passing, you know, Prop 30, all this funding. Do teachers really have to buy their own supplies?
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay, great. Thank. Good question. What's you said you have an observation.
Observation. I had a, she's sort of a circuit preacher, if you will. She was a New Age person. I don't know if she's still doing it or not, but her name was Betty Bethards from Petaluma. And she would come to Fort Mason in San Francisco and talk to groups of people. And she highly recommended taking an hour a day just for play. And I started integrating that into my life. There have been a lot of political changes and cosmopolitan changes that have really challenged that, but I still try to do it. And I'm the kind of person who used to live by lists, you know, like 8 things to do each day, that kind of stuff. And I find it's very helpful to your overall productivity, and I enjoyed one of your previous callers who was multi-talented, and you helped him market himself, which was really cool.
I want to talk a little bit about that. There are 2 approaches to play. One is to compartmentalize it into an hour a day. But I like to, at least in my own life, and again, not everybody's going to do things my way. You're going to do it your own way. But I try to inject a measure of play in everything I do. Like, I'm working right now, but I think you can tell I'm playing with Barbara. We make jokes. I'm making jokes with callers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm extremely relaxed. I'm playing all day. I'm serious and playing as appropriate all day. So it's not compartmentalized. I am, you know, I do work 80 hours a week, but I'm never tired. I never burn out.
I never
feel stressed because I'm injecting. There's a couple of things. One is there is a playful quality, but also I do have perspective. I am an atheist, but I am a Buddhist in being in the moment. All I'm doing, I'm not worrying about whether I'm succeeding or failing with a client or with anything else. I am simply being in the moment, trying to be the best human being I can, and that keeps me from being stressed. My mom is old. She's fading, but I don't think about her future. When I talk with my mommy, I simply sing to her. She loves when I sing to her or play the piano, or I show her the rose from my garden. I think that the key to a productive and stress-free life is the combination of doing work you are good at, not so much that you love, but that you're good at so you're not stressed, doing it with a measure of understanding a perspective of how important is this in the larger scheme of things. Yes, having humor while you're doing it, but I'm not a big fan of compartmentalizing play into 1 hour a day, I must admit, and I never do
any
of it.
Well, we're all different. She's my kind of woman. That's
okay.
What I call downtime.
All right. Well,
everybody's different.
Great. I thank you so much for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Well, do you have it, Barbara? You said you want a minute to think about a tip. You want another minute? Should we go to the phones, or you have a tip for us?
Go to the phones, because of course I got my tip and then I forgot it while I was listening to the caller.
Okay. You know, I'll give you a little. I'm going to do a little tap dance for you. A little temporizing. Let me share a tip myself. It was very helpful to me. I did it about 20 years ago. It was a one-time activity, and it saved me time and given me focus ever since. I wrote a personal mission statement, and mine was use my best skills, writing, speaking, and listening, to help people with their career and to nationwide improve work life, education, and restore a measure of fair treatment to men and boys. And that personal mission statement, in 25 words or less, I guess, concretizes what's important to me. And so when I have discretion in my time, instead of frittering it away unfocusedly, if that's a word, I can focus on the things that I believe are the most important to me, my personal mission statement. That's my tip. You got one, or should we go to the phones?
Well, my tip, of course, is if you're on the phone, never just be on the phone, because we're no longer held to the phone by a cord. So you can be walking around doing all kinds of things while you're talking on the phone.
Yeah, that's the multitasking. I mean, when you and I, you know, we spend during, for those of you who don't know, Barbara and I, we spend our weekends together in Napa, but during the week I'm in Oakland, and we speak on the phone all the time. And I'm used to Barbara, you know, while she's on the phone, she's cleaning up, she's doing her hair in the morning or whatever it is we're talking. I'm not offended. Or the laundry. And so, you know, I don't feel neglected, or even sometimes when we're in person, she is not at all averse to checking her email. It's not, you know, people can say, oh my God, can't you give your husband full attention? I'm not offended. She enjoys it, you know, taking a moment to do it. And yes, sometimes something's important, right? So, you know, your earlier advice about, you know, the 1 hour a day on the email, you could not be a bigger violator of that. Is that a fair statement?
I'm really talking about in the office, Monday through Friday, when I'm actually going in and I'm there. That's where I think you need to make sure that you're accomplishing. When I'm checking my email on the weekends, that's not, I don't count that as working time, even though, yes, I am working.
Because it's fun, because you, it's a window into the world of cool things and feedback and potentially pictures from the grandchildren or some cool thing from your coworkers.
I don't want to be getting sucked into that during the week. That's the distinction.
But I think many people would say that it's, quote, pathology, it's a workaholic thing. You are addicted to something bad. If, like, I know, dear Barbara, that when we're driving up to Mendocino for our vacation, and but also work, it's a combination. It's a work conference.
First,
the superintendent's
on vacation. I have to do a presentation tomorrow.
Right.
I'm going to be working.
But
it
I mean,
just happens to be that the meeting is in Mendocino.
Right. So in the drive up there, am I correct that you will probably check your email?
Oh, absolutely. But it's Sunday.
Well, that's the point. The people would call you a workaholic for on Sunday not turning off your email, looking at your work email. What I'm saying is that we make an arbitrary distinction between that. We somehow denigrate that which is productive. Isn't it more, it's not like it stresses you to look at your email. Isn't it cosmically better for the world and for yourself to be checking email in the car as you're driving to Mendocino than necessarily just to stare at the scenery? If you need the time to stare at the scenery, of course that's fine.
Absolutely,
but it shouldn't be.
I don't think anybody would call me a workaholic for doing that. I think that we are all today. I mean, you look around, you will not see anybody in the streets at any time, from young teenagers and pre-teenagers to adults and older people, who is not walking around checking their phones all the time. You can't get on a train. You can't get on a plane. That's what people do. It's just a new generation, and that's not considered workaholism.
But
that's considered being addicted to our devices and addicted to connection.
Our work-life balance people relentlessly today in this new world decry that. And what I'm raising as an alternative is that it is not necessarily to be decried. Nobody should be criticizing you for checking your email on Saturdays and Sundays. And yet the work-life balance advocates, not all, but most of them, decry somebody looking at checking their email on Saturdays and Sundays. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Hi, is that you, Marty?
It is.
Great. This is Leah again, and you know I've had cancer, and hopefully it's gone. So I have to really say, in the time I have left, my mother is the most important thing, since we had a really rocky past, and I want to get to know her before one of us goes. So since chemo, my memory's really bad. I have a keychain that's on a necklace at all times. I have mini pads that hook on to my keys, which are all around my neck. So I write if I'm walking, I'm on BART, if I'm in the store, because I can't remember a thing. All right, that's the first thing for efficiency. I'm 52, but I live like a senior citizen. Everything in my two rooms that I live with my boyfriend, everything, we are like seniors. Everything rolls. It's really lightweight since I have arthritis in my hands. I don't want it to get worse. So that's the second thing, living like a senior citizen as soon as you can. All right, two, I'm extremely affected by clutter. My mother was a hoarder, and believe me, the city of Berkeley has almost condemned her house a few times. All right, so what I do is, the second biggest goal I have is, first, going anywhere with my mother. Second is clearing out the apartment. Now, I've had free massage because I'm very poor. I go to a clinic for poor people. I have acupuncture. All that has left me, even therapy. Everything has left me, even mindfulness meditation, because I must clean the apartment because the stress I experience getting out the door is too much. So I'm constantly eliminating. I carry a very beautiful Italian lightweight leather fanny pack, no purses. I clean it out every day when I'm on BART. Okay, when I'm on, it has mini scissors, a mini slasher to slash out pages from books I want, since I create notebooks of the very important pages in books over my lifetime that I've marked up. So I'm constantly doing that, even standing in line. So I have everything in there that I need, medication, food bar, okay, even pads for my feet. I have foot conditions that require them. I do it right on BART. Okay, so more than anything else I can do to get to anything else in the future, including and especially turning on my computer and email any person, is to clear the apartment out, because stress causes added methyl groups to cell division, which creates ripe conditions for cancer. All right, then I'm always reducing a 300-page book to maybe 10. I cut out beautiful images from my old books. And the main thing is organization creates lack of stress. So for 3 months now, I have not turned on my computer except once a week. I do not respond to email, and I haven't even returned calls because I figure people know I am trying to save my own life. And for the first time, I am putting myself first. And I find myself just entranced by you two. I've been an atheist all my life, Berkeley raised, very intellectual, academic, and yet I believe in the Buddhist philosophy of trying to learn that trauma comes and goes, that the only thing that counts is living in the moment. I had never done that because I've had 42 years of therapy, and I'm 52, as I said, and I needed the therapy to even be able to be around people. So it's been a long haul. Now I'm in a beautiful relationship. I finally have organized attachment, secure attachment, rather than disorganized attachment, which made my brain so chaotic I could not hold on to things, which is why I had so much clutter. I'm no longer in that state. So please, God, let me live, I say every day, so that my 70s, my 60s, the rest of my 50s will be the richest time in my life, and I will reap the rewards of always dreaming of a future right before age 42, before I had secure attachment. And of course, a happy marriage comes first in life, and then the career. All right, you guys, that's it. You've got, that's it.
That was efficient. That was a lot of things in a short period of time.
I actually do want to ask you a short question. Oh, she's gone. Okay. The interesting question is, her mother was a hoarder, and she has managed to rid herself. I'm always interested in people who change. She comes from a family background where that was encouraged for a variety of reasons. It usually comes from a feeling of emptiness and excessive tying to concrete objects. And it was likely her cancer that made her realize that she needed to reduce the stress. I'm guessing I'm answering my own question. I guess sometimes it takes an extreme event to change something so foundational to someone as a tendency to hoard. One other thing she said that I wanted to comment on, she said that she now, instead of reading books, she reads these 10-page things or whatever. That's something that I also do, and I think is a useful time management tip. There are times, of course, that I love reading a whole book. In fact, going on my vacation, I'm taking Jaron Lanier's new book, Who Owns the Future. He's going to be a guest on this show on the 18th of April, August. And I will read that cover to cover because I just think he's brilliant. He has something smart to say on every page. But more often than not now, I get a lot of free books because people want to come on my radio show, so the publicist sent me the books. I will look at the front cover. I will look at the back cover. If those appeal, I will simply look at the table of contents. I will turn to either the synthesis chapter of the book and read the summary that usually is there at the end, or I might simply go to Amazon.com and read the reader reviews are put in the order of usefulness because readers can say how useful the reviews are. And very often one of the first reviews is a summary of the book. And I'm able to then have access, to have the main points of dozens and dozens of books every year in almost no time. So that's another great way. Consider reading book summaries from Amazon or even articles. Very often an author of a book writes a summary of his book in an article. So just Google the name of the book and the author, and you'll often get the article. We are just about out of time. You have 20 seconds. I want you to give Barbara Nemco the last word, please.
Evaluate yourself. If you need help, get it. It can change your life.
And Barbara, I think I like to think that you and I perhaps changed folks' lives a bit. And so, of course, thank you very much, as usual, for being my co-conspirator here on Work with Marty Nemco.
It was very fun. It's an honor, as you say.
Great. And Debbie Kennedy, I want to thank you as well for being really steady. She's been off and on. She's been kind of the substitute board operator for a bunch of years. Very steady, and I know she does know she knows what she's doing, which is great. I also, of course, want to thank all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute workovers on callers. And Robert Neuwirth has spent years visiting the world's slums and squatter cities. He's the author of a book called Shadow Cities. And he says his experiences in the slums offer work-life lessons for all of us. So he'll be my guest next week. Till next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.